Liberty in our lifetimes in a free state of our own. That's the vision. That's the dream. And we are building it in New Hampshire. I'm Eric Brakey, your host and renegade statesman for the Porcupine Report. Welcome to your source for porcupine news and free-range conversation on matters of liberty. All right, let's hop into the show. Hey there, everyone. Eric Brakey here, your host, your renegade statesman, executive director of the Free State Project, coming to you for episode 7 of the Porcupine Report. Thank you so much for joining us all this evening. We're going to have a great show ahead. And I'll tell you, the big thing this week is what we have been building up towards for weeks now. Every single episode, what's the first thing I tell you? Get your tickets for the New Hampshire Liberty Forum. Well, that moment is now upon us. When this episode releases, we're recording it on Monday. It's going to be released on Wednesday. That leaves us what? 2 days? 2 days to the New Hampshire Liberty Forum by the time this show airs? It's your last chance to get tickets. We've got hundreds sold. We're going to have a fantastic turnout with some great speakers. Our headliners, of course, you know them, you love them. I've been telling you about them every single week. We have Brian Kaplan, professor of economics at George Mason University. We have Glenn Jacobs, mayor of Knox County, Tennessee, who also happens to be the WWE superstar Kane. And of course, we also have four-term congresswoman, member of the armed forces who served her country and a critic of the forever war state, Tulsi Gabbard. She will be speaking with us. And of course, she's being rumored as a potential VP pick. Of course, I heard, you know, it's been speculated that she's been on the short list for Donald Trump. But actually, in the last episode, it was also mentioned she might be on the short list for Robert F. Kennedy Jr. too. I don't know. I guess when you go independent and you leave the Democratic Party behind, there's a lot of people who would like to be able to work with you and have you on their team. Anyway, we're very excited to have Tulsi Gabbard joining us. She's going to be speaking on Saturday, but it's a 2-day conference, Friday and Saturday. Now's your last chance to get your tickets. That's Friday, March 15th through Sunday, March 17th. You know, Sunday we'll have a nice breakfast for VIP folks. Big thing is Friday and Saturday. So come join us. Don't miss out. And today on the show, we have a great guest who will be joining us at the New Hampshire Liberty Forum. He's a good friend, someone I've known for several years. And he is one of the leaders at a organization that does tremendous work for the Liberty Movement here in America, an organization that I worked for a period of time. I was very proud to call home for a little while with all the great work that they're doing. The organization is Young Americans for Liberty. They are, in fact, a sponsor. We're so happy to be partnering with them for the New Hampshire Liberty Forum. And my guest today is Sean Tema, who last I checked was the chief of staff at Young Americans for Liberty. But boy, I'll tell you, when I was there, I had like three different titles. So I actually didn't ask him before we got started if his title is still chief of staff. Anyway, we'll have to ask him when he comes on. Hey, Sean, welcome to the Porcupine Report.
Mr. Brakey, Senator Brakey, great to be here. Thanks for having me.
It's good to see you. Is it still chief of staff? Is that still the title?
So, you know, I hate to correct you on your own show. It is now chief operating officer. But yes, you know, the titles, they come and go, they change. So
yeah, I think at one point, growth strategist. Another time I was like a policy advisor and then spokes. Anyway, there's so many titles. Anyway, you're moving up in the world. Already you were a chief of staff. Now you're the chief operating officer. So
I'm no executive director of FSP. So love seeing you in that role. Great guy to lead the org.
Well, I appreciate it, Sean. And I know that you are on the road right now. So for those watching the video version, they might be wondering like, what's Sean doing calling us? You know, you got like a doorway in the back, right? You're in a hotel room right now in Ohio. Where you want to tell folks what you're doing out in Ohio?
Absolutely. So I'm out here in Southern Ohio, real America. Not that New Hampshire is not real America, but you know, this is the other side of real America, Southern Ohio. I'm on the ground here with door knockers recruited by Young Americans for Liberty, who are on the ground knocking on doors in the Ohio primary to try and take out what we call the Blue 22. This is a block of 22 rhinos who teamed up to block a Liberty Speaker of the House in Ohio and are really just getting in the way of Ohio becoming a Liberty Lighthouse state, right? They've got a great majority out in Ohio that could pass transformative tax cuts. They could pass real criminal justice reform. They could pass, you know, the expansion of education freedom. They could be standing for all these Liberty things. And you've got these 22 rhinos who are getting in the way. And so we're targeting them, right? We're going to replace them with real Liberty candidates. And the way to do that is to get door knockers on the ground, bringing the message directly to the voter. And so I'm out here with these people who are working night and day, 12-hour days, to wake up the constituents and to get turnout going for the primary, which is Tuesday the 19th. These are the people putting in the real work. And you know as much as anybody, Eric, someone who's knocked a lot of doors. So that's what I'm up to this week, right before Liberty Forum.
Awesome. Door knocking is the gold standard of campaigning. There's no shortcuts around it. And I know that's always been what, at least in the last decade or so, the really the amazing thing that Young Americans for Liberty has brought to the table is all of these young people who want to make a difference for Liberty. And rather than just sitting on Facebook and winning, you know, Facebook arguments, they're getting out there, they're knocking doors and making an actual difference, talking to voters at the door. And I will say, while I'm, you know, living in Maine now, or my family goes back many generations and moving to New Hampshire, where, well, I don't know, we'll make it write a new future there. I did grow up in Ohio, just outside of Cleveland. And so I'm especially, you know, it is, while I've haven't lived there in a long time, it is nice to see the way Ohio's kind of gone from being a swing state to more of a red state, and the Liberty contingent within the Republican Party in Ohio is growing. I will say a shout out to my sister-in-law, Carolyn Brakey, who is actually running for Geauga County Commissioner in Ohio in the primary next week. So just as all those Liberty candidates are running and taking out the Blue 22 in those primaries, I'll be watching closely to see how some other Liberty candidates are doing. So good luck to all the Liberty candidates running in Ohio. And if it doesn't work out for you, you can always move to New Hampshire.
Hey, I endorse that, you know, as a New Hampshire native myself.
All right, well, let's talk about that. So we'll get into more kind of Young Americans for Liberty and the vision and kind of what's happening there. But Sean, you grew up in New Hampshire. You are a New Hampshire native. And along the way, you've gone from being a New Hampshire native to now living down in Austin, Texas, and being one of the leaders with Young Americans for Liberty. I guess, tell us a little bit about your individual story. How'd you get on the path to Liberty and where you are today? From New Hampshire.
Yeah, so grew up in New Hampshire, wasn't really involved politically until I got into college. I don't know how common it is, I call it the Michael Moore to libertarianism pipeline, right? But when I got into college, wanted to figure out how to make a difference. You know, the way I just saw the world was that things aren't fair and we need smart people in there who are going to right the wrongs that are created in America. And the way to do that is through the right policies in government, right? Through raising taxes to lift people out of prosperity, to remake the regulations so that these big corporations couldn't, you know, get in the way of the American dream. I looked up to people like Michael Moore, Michael Bloomberg, as the answers to these problems, just because at the time they were who were presented as the people who knew what was going on. They were the gold standard. So I went into college, and I was very excited to go to class and learn all about the ways we can use government to save this country and to make things better. And I didn't really find any real solutions in the classroom. You know, I have a BA and BS, right, and a liberal arts degree. And so a lot of my classes were just, you know, professors pontificating and then us talking about ways that, you know, America is just irredeemable, and how there is no way to move forward, and how capitalism is corrupt, and the solution, well, there really is no solution besides to just burn everything down. And so we're sitting there, we're moping, and we're whining, and it just felt wrong. You know, sometimes you just feel things in your gut, right? You want to be uplifted. I believed in agency. I really did believe that, you know, if you just stood up and maybe start a business, even, right, a social impact business, or just, I wanted to make a solution happen. And I wasn't getting any of those solutions in the classroom. I was just getting hit with, at the time, they were transparent. They called it critical theory, right? Now you hear it as critical race theory or DEI or wokeness or what have you. But I realized it all came back to, you know, the solution was either to burn everything down or to create more government. But for what? For what? There was no clear path forward. And so I started looking for, well, what are solutions we can create that are going to lift people up? And thanks to Young Americans for Liberty recruiting on my campus and through some exposure to Rand Paul and then later on Ron Paul, I realized that government wasn't the answer. It was the problem. And as you can tell by our best-selling shirt at YAL, I learned you shouldn't trust the government. You should trust people to create those solutions. And more importantly, I learned through Young Americans for Liberty that's actually a limited constitutional government that's going to right many of those wrongs and fix the fairness problem in this country by giving people a shot and getting government the heck out of the way. So did a total 180, ended up starting a YAL chapter on my campus, ended up trying to make, you know, alliances with the left, right, where we could agree on criminal justice and what have you. Granted, I went to college, you know, pre-Trump, so things were a little less heated on campus. Now things are a little more heated, right? It's harder to find those alliances and work together. So I guess I'm lucky I went to college when I did. But that was my path. I fell into it, got in, just trying to make a difference. And I think that, you know, if you ever read the book, The Righteous Mind by Jonathan Haidt, he really touches on this, is that some people are motivated by fairness. And I guess the best way to summarize my shift is I realized that the government was creating more unfairness, more injustice, and creating more wrongs than rights. Whereas liberty is the answer both to prosperity and fairness, is the way I see the world now.
Now, where did you go to college?
Went to a college in Ithaca, New York. Not the college for smart people. That's Cornell. I went to the school that was for the film kids and the theater kids. I was a little too chicken to go in and pursue the arts. I'm, you know, like you, Eric, I'm a big theater guy. I love musical theater.
I did audition for the theater program at Ithaca. I didn't get in.
It's tough. It's a tough business. Yeah, I mean, everyone was so talented.
It would have cost an arm and a leg anyway. It would have been way too expensive for me.
Exactly. So, yeah, I went to school up there, Central New York. I moved to D.C. after that. And then when Young Americans for Liberty relocated all the way down to Austin, became a Texan. And, you know, when I moved down there, I used to say, oh, I'm from the Texas of the North, New Hampshire, thinking people would find it kind of cute, kind of funny. And, you know, the real Texans, they looked at me and they said, don't ever say that again. There's only one Texas. And I was like, okay, all right, I'm never going to say that again. But, you know, enough parallels, that rugged individualism, this inherent kind of spirit of liberty, I think runs true in Texas and New Hampshire, manifests a little bit differently in culture. But yeah, yeah, it feels like home. It feels like home.
I will say, you know, I had a conversation with Jason Sorens, who's founder of the Free State Project and was one of the authors of the Freedom in the 50 States Index that recently was published, and where New Hampshire was ranked number one. I don't remember where Texas was, but Texas was very high on economic freedom, but kind of near the bottom of the barrel when it comes to personal freedom. So I guess that's a cultural difference there. Well, anyway, always more work to do for freedom and liberty, but there certainly is a nice freedom streak on certain issues in Texas. That's very appreciated. I know from, you know, when I lived there. So you found liberty at college. You got pulled out of the kind of the Democrat kind of or the critical theory matrix. And you've been at Young Americans for Liberty now for a good long while. You're now, you know, helping to lead the organization. What have you seen in terms of, you know, you've been there during the period of time in which you had like Operation Win at the Door starting up and growing, and a refocus of Young Americans for Liberty on really mobilizing activists to make a difference in state legislative races. Could you tell me a little bit about what you've seen in terms of that transition and that refocus of the organization and how and what have been the fruits of that?
Absolutely. So Young Americans for Liberty started around 2008, born out of Students for Ron Paul. And it was a continuation of that energy that we saw on college campuses for all these students standing up and saying, I want Ron Paul to win the presidency in 2008. And I support the ideas he stands for, limited government and freedom. So it was a continuation of that movement. Now, the first 8 years or so, it was laser focused on building the youth army, right? And ensuring that students who came into college have that opportunity, just like me, to discover the ideas of liberty, to spread the message on campus. Remember Ron's call to spread the message after his campaign ended, and really just fortifying the next generation of liberty leaders, right? And the mission statement, you know, we come right out and say we're here to reclaim the direction of our government by building the leaders of tomorrow. So the first 8 years laser focused on that. And around 2018, it was a team effort. We decided to expand and say, we don't want, just want to build the youth army. We want to deploy it. We want to get as many students as we can out there knocking on doors, specifically to help elect liberty legislators at the state level, right? You look at federal races, it's important, right? We want people to ascend to Congress who believe in what we believe, but it's such a harder universe to influence. Millions of dollars being spent, maybe to move a couple percentage points. And it's really easy to go bad in DC. There's a lot of dark forces at play, lots of power struggles. But at the end of the day too, and coronavirus, COVID really showed us this, the majority of government interference happens within your own state, in your own backyard, right? It wasn't DC who kept us locked in our houses. It was the people in the governor's mansions. It was the people in the state houses who voted for these lockdowns. So seeing the path to real change, transformative change happening at the states, and realizing, hey, with enough doors knocked and enough, you know, candidate name ID getting out there, enough young people reaching voters and saying, you should vote specifically for this state representative, you know, we've realized we could influence races by 6 to 15% with Operation Win at the Door. You know, the difference between a politician winning and losing, the difference between a rhino winning or a socialist Democrat, right? We've realized that with lots of refining and continual, you know, efforts to get better, we had that power. So we set a lofty goal to elect 250 liberty legislators by the end of 2022. And after three major cycles, we ended up blowing that goal out of the water. Total team effort across the whole team and all the students knocking doors. And we knocked over 1 million doors to get this done. And we ended up helping to elect over 300 liberty legislators, 328 in the coalition by the end of 2022. So after that, we took a step back and said, well, what comes next, right? We can keep electing this big group of liberty legislators. That's important. We can't stop doing that. We've got to have students knocking doors electorally. But we saw, even without a ton of intentional programming behind it, that the real impact these legislators were making was passing transformative liberty legislation, right? We see governing minorities in states like Kentucky or Missouri, where these people, these champions, like, you know, Savannah Maddox in Kentucky, you know, they were the reasons that school choice was being passed, the reasons constitutional carry were being passed. These are the people who are forcing votes, the people who are the difference makers, whether a bill made it out of the House or died in committee. And we said, okay, we're going to expand this mission to not only build the youth army and not only to elect liberty legislators, but to pass transformative liberty legislation and keep up door knocking to do that, to reach constituents during the legislative season and let them know when important bills were on the docket, which state representatives to call to make sure they voted correctly, and ultimately to, over the period of the next several cycles, try and create what we're calling Liberty Lighthouse states, right? These are states that are going to stand out from the rest of the pack and shine a light into the darkness, right? We have these states like New York, Illinois, California. They are the models for what tyranny is, what big government is. And right now, there aren't states out there that can rise to that level of New York and California for liberty, right? To challenge them and say, no, this is what a true Liberty Lighthouse state can look like. This is what a light shining out into the darkness can look like for other states to follow. And that looks like states that are passing transformative legislation on several different issue areas. You've got, you know, economic freedom. So the total abolition of some taxes, states that are abolishing property tax, income tax outright. You got states that will pass universal school choice. Education is a key part of this. So every child has a choice to go to a school that meets their needs. Or you've got healthcare reform, certificate of need. If you don't know what that is, you got to Google it. It's an awful law. It's getting in the way of medical freedom, especially we see COVID impacting this, right? Laws that get in the way of building hospitals. So medical freedom and also, you know, measures that protect people's medical privacy during COVID. Criminal justice reform, civil asset forfeiture, it can be gone. It's wildly unpopular. And we can see these lighthouse states leading the charge on that. And overall limited government, slashing regulations, right? Reining in the power of rogue law enforcement, no-knock warrants. So across several issue areas, building states that have legislators that can push and pass this transformative policy so that we can ultimately take this country back, restore it to the founders' intent, doing that state by state. So that's what we're here to do, build, elect, and pass.
You know, it is really, I mean, amazing to think about. I think people sometimes see, like, I don't know if you've ever seen, Sean, like the interactive map of, like, it's like the time-lapse map of constitutional carry states in America. You go from like 2004, there's like two of them, and, you know, and then like every 4 years, it's doubling and doubling and doubling. Now here we are in 2024, and there's 29 now, with Louisiana and South Carolina just getting on board. Of course, I remember when there was an effort years back to get South Carolina on board with constitutional carry. There were like two-thirds Republican supermajorities in both chambers, and the Republicans were saying, oh, it's not time for constitutional carry. We're going to do this little, you know, we're going to do something mealy-mouthed about open carry. And Young Americans for Liberty kicking out one of its own coalition members because they had broken a pledge on supporting constitutional carry and holding people accountable there. And just a few years later now, you see constitutional carry being passed into law there. And it is interesting to see, like, as people watch that time-lapse map of constitutional carry states popping off, you can almost, like, you know, I look at that and I know, and every state I look at it, it's like, I wonder what role Young Americans for Liberty played in that victory, or what role a Hazlitt coalition legislator played in that victory. Because I know when Texas passed constitutional carry, Yow played a big role in it. I know, and of course, that hasn't been the only issue. You talk about school choice. I mean, boy, some of the first states to pass school choice, like real school choice, education freedom accounts, like in New Hampshire or in other states, they call them education savings accounts. Yow was right there. Yow legislators were right there in those first early efforts, passing real the first early wave of this school choice revolution that's taken place. So what do you see? I mean, obviously, school choice is, you know, constitutional carry. I'm not sure how many more states we're going to be able to get on for constitutional carry. We've got like over half the country now. I remember when it was just a few. School choice seems to be catching kind of a new wave, and it's really amazing to see kind of efforts going on there. What do you see from like Hazlitt coalition legislators on, I know an issue that we talk about a lot on this show, defend the guard. What are you seeing from folks in the Hazlitt coalition across America there?
Absolutely. Well, you know, to brag on New Hampshire a bit, right? And we've got great team effort behind this. I mean, folks like Free State Project, other groups in New Hampshire making this possible, these support systems. It is totally a team effort. And we got to keep finding ways to unite on transformative legislation where we can. You know, and particular in school choice in New Hampshire, you know, very grateful and proud, again, as a New Hampshire native, to see the first school choice program rolled out a couple of years ago in New Hampshire with education savings accounts. And just a couple weeks ago in the New Hampshire legislature, right? As you know, I'm sure our viewers know, New Hampshire, it's a tight house right now in that you've got barely a Republican majority, but it's very bipartisan, hard to get certain bills through, right? The House recently passed ESA expansion, educational savings account expansion in New Hampshire, which means more parents will get more of their tax dollars back to spend as they see fit on their kids' education, right? That bill passed the House by one vote.
Yeah.
One vote was the difference between that school choice bill expanding or not expanding, right? And that's out of 400 House members. And so if you're ever wondering if your vote matters, right? Know that your choice to vote for the Liberty candidate to get out there, to go to the ballot box, you know, or to stay home, especially in New Hampshire, where there's such tight margins of voting. You see some candidates a couple of years ago, you know, Robert Forsyth comes to mind. He won by like 3 or 4 votes, right? You have the agency to be the difference as to whether or not kids get more choice in their education and parents get more choice in their education or not. Because this bill passed by one vote. And we see this in other states too, you know, Missouri and Kentucky, you know, bills passing by one vote, passing veto overrides by just one vote. And so that really is the impact you can have as a voter and as an activist at the state level. You know, you call a congressman in DC, right? They get about 100 calls in a day about a bill. You know, if they're in a swing district, they're in a tight race, they might think about changing their vote at the federal level. You can do that by just getting a dozen calls into a state representative's office in some of these states, right? If their phone rings 12 times and says, hey, we're upset that we don't have enough school choice. What are you doing about it? That might be enough to get the person with the direct lever of power to change their vote and vote in favor of liberty. So I'm very optimistic about the continual expansion of school choice in New Hampshire. We see Defend the Guard doing very well in New Hampshire and in other states. That is an incredibly important bill, especially as we see, you know, the war machine beating its drums harder every day, right? It's such a force to be reckoned with. But if we can protect our National Guard and not senselessly send people to die in these foreign unconstitutional wars that do nothing to protect America's safety, we got to do that. That's why we have to see Defend the Guard legislation succeed. So very optimistic about school choice, very optimistic about Defend the Guard in New Hampshire in particular. So there's a lot of good things going on right now.
Awesome. So let's say I'm a young person. I don't have any gray hair in my beard yet. And I'm a student at, let's say, Dartmouth College or University of New Hampshire. And you got me sold. I want to get involved with Young Americans for Liberty, but I don't know what to do. I don't know how to get involved. What should I do first?
Well, YALiberty.org/join is always there for you, and you can sign up. If you're looking to drop out of college or take the summer and say, hey, I want a job where I'm making a real impact. You know, I want to get out there. I want to get, you know, in the dirt, knocking doors, reaching voters directly. You know, go to YALiberty.org/knock, and we're taking applications for a lot of door knockers across the whole year, but especially this summer. Lots of door knocking happening across the country, paid opportunity through Operation Win at the Door. On your campus, right? You can look and you can reach out to our team to see if there is a chapter on your campus. Again, all this information is on the website. And if you're interested in stepping up and getting involved and saying, hey, you know, I want to be that agent of change on campus. I want to stand up for what I believe in. You know, our team will be there to support you and to guide you every step of the way. And if you're out there and you're hesitant about it, just know that I was too. I mean, I'll never forget sitting in front of my computer. Right. It's a day before, a couple days before I start my senior year of college, and I'm staring in the face, right, the application to start a chapter of Young Americans for Liberty on my campus. And I'm thinking, man, do I really want to do this? And a little voice in the back of my head said, you know, if I don't, I think I'm really going to look back and regret it, not standing up for what I believe in. So if you ever get that itch or that feeling in your gut of, man, this is going to be hard. This is going to be change. This is going to be something that I don't necessarily have a roadmap on how to do it. But you have that voice in your head saying, no, like, stick to your guns, stick to your principles. Follow that voice because things are going to work out. And if it's getting involved with YAL, again, our team will be there with you every step of the way. You ask for help, you will receive it.
Now, what are some of the things I know during the COVID era, I heard so many stories and talked to so many activists on college campuses who were fighting mask mandates, fighting vaccine mandates, a lot of fights. I mean, for basic rights and liberties on college campuses in those days. What are some of the things on the college campus front that Young Americans for Liberty activists are taking the charge on these days on their college campuses?
Absolutely. So one of my favorite programs, talk a lot about Operation Win at the Door, right? And that's how we make a political difference. On campus, not only are our students and our programs educating and spreading the message, but we are directly challenging oppressive campus policies that take away your liberties in real time, but giving folks the toolkit to overturn those policies and really bring the ultimate civic engagement to campus. It's the ultimate civics lesson. It's stuff you won't learn in the political science classroom. And that's our student rights campaign. And this is a program that teaches students, recruits students, and trains students on if they've got a speech code on their campus, you know, a ban on speech, a free speech zone, right? A bias code, reporting system, anything that infringes on speech on campus, right? Show you the ropes on how to overturn that. If you've got a pepper spray ban on your campus, and I bet you do, and you don't even know it because many colleges have them, they're buried in the handbook. We give folks the roadmap and the training on how to stand up, how to fight back and to overturn that. If you've got still got vaccine mandates on your campus or God forbid a mask mandate still, the roadmap on how to overturn that. And this is really taking lessons, you know, that are right in front of us from the left, right? The same lessons and rules for radicals, the same tactics that the left uses to protest and get the change that they want, but this time applying it for liberty. And one of my favorite stories is you've got, you know, this chapter out in Kentucky, and our activist saw there was a pepper spray ban on that campus. So he went right to the sorority, right? One of the sororities on campus just knocked up on the door and said, "Hey, do you know that there is a pepper spray ban on the campus? Do you know that if you get caught carrying pepper spray, you know, you'll be fined, subject to discipline? Does that seem fair to you?" Within like an hour of that, the whole sorority was starting to phone bank and call the university president's office and demanding and saying, "How dare you take away my right to self-defense? This is reprehensible. You need to change this immediately." And the president reached back out and was like, "Oh yeah, we're going to fix this. We're going to fix this." Right. And that was one of our easiest cases, but several times, you know, many times you have to go through the process of getting petition signatures, standing up, advocating, saying, "Hey, we want to overturn this code. We want to overturn this pepper spray ban. We want to overturn this vaccine mandate." The process of getting signatures, getting petition signups, and showing a show of support, holding a rally on campus, delivering those petitions directly to the university president, right? It's often a long ball game and it takes courage, but we want to teach students at a very young age, the only way that you will get change is if you put pressure on the decision makers, right? Yeah. That's true in the state legislature. That's true in a college campus, right? And, you know, I remember back in those critical theory classes, right? You know, you kind of roll your eyes when you hear the platitudes of, "Oh, you know, the oppressor will never teach you how to liberate yourself. You've got to, you know, fight back. You've got to stand up and they'll take it from them willingly." And, you know, they get old after a while, right? These leftist sayings. But honestly, like, it's kind of the same principle, right? The university president is not going to just bend over and bow down and say, "Sure, we'll do what you want. We'll give you the pepper spray. Sure, you ask nicely. We'll get rid of this free speech code." No, they have to be pressured. They have to hear the will of the student voice brought directly to them. And whether that's through a rally, whether that's through petition delivery, whether that's through a bunch of phone calls, we teach the students how to get that done. It's been very successful. Over 143 policies overturned that are unconstitutional or anti-liberty, over 1 million students impacted each year. I'm just really proud of the team. And if you're listening to this and you want to take advantage of that opportunity, again, whyliberty.org, check out our website, reach out to our team. We are here. We are ready. We want to see you win.
You know, it's the exact same principle as good practice, because it's the exact same principle that you use to, you know, to impact your college president that you would use to impact your state legislature. I mean, I know right now I'm gathering like thousands of petitions against the national popular vote. And I enjoy just dropping them, having Senate staff drop them off every single day on all the desks of all the Democrat senators who just look at me. It's like, more petitions of constituents from my district. I get that like evil glare. They're just not happy with me. But, you know, at the end of the day, I you know, whether they hate me for it or love me for it, I'll just be glad as long as they vote the right way, whether they believe it in their heart or not, you know. And it's great that, you know, Young Americans for Liberty is training young liberty activists on how to do the things that actually work and making an impact, and not the, I don't know, all these groups out there. There's so many groups out there where, you know, sometimes worst case scenario, it's just a social club. People get together every week and they complain about things, but they never actually know how to do something to take action in a way that actually makes a difference, you know? So anyway, I worked at Young Americans for Liberty for a year and a half, so I'm a big fan of everything that's going on there and the difference that's being made, and the difference that's being made, you know, in states that I love, in Maine, in New Hampshire, with the Young Americans for Liberty support. And I know you're going to be joining us. You're going to be back in New Hampshire for the New Hampshire Liberty Forum coming up this weekend. Anything you're especially looking forward to coming back to your home state?
Absolutely. Well, I'm just really excited to connect with people who have recently moved to New Hampshire, right? Welcome them retroactively, even though I'm not living there anymore. Got a lot of great state legislators who are going to be there. I want to thank them for doing a great job for standing up, you know, when times are tough. Obviously, hello, Tulsi, Glenn Jacobs. These are champions of freedom. I'm excited to see them speak. Got Jack Hunter speaking. He has been just such an inspiration. Someone who I used to read when I was, you know, formulating my ideas of what liberty means to me. And, you know, honestly, you know, I'm excited to really just kind of take in Nashua, because I never really spent a ton of time there growing up. I was more of a, You know, the big city to me was Manchester. You know, he never really went down south. So, you know, it'd be nice to see that city in a new light. And of course, you know, hearing some of these other champions speak is just going to be incredible.
Now, when Texas succeeds in seceding from the Union, this whole Texit movement there, is Young Americans for Liberty going to have to change its name, or are you guys going to move somewhere else so you can still be Young Americans for Liberty? And if you're looking to move, is New Hampshire at the top of your list?
Well, I'll tell you what, in the event that that happens, you know, definitely be a satellite branch opening to help keep the Liberty going, right? In whatever state does do that. But no, we're going to keep the fight on, you know, the rest of the country who's being, you know, strangleholded by DC. Definitely, you know, encourage moving to New Hampshire. It's a great state. Again, 93 Liberty legislators that are in office right now. And so, you know, incredible champions who are in the state capitol. You don't get that in every state. Of course, you got the no income tax. You got the no seatbelts. You got the no helmets. You got the fireworks stores right off the highway. I mean, I could go on, but obviously a lot of love for the home state. Maybe someday I'll be back. I think I technically signed the I'll be back someday pledge, even if that means fulfilling it on a small plot of land when I'm 85, preferably on the coast.
So you signed the pledge with the Free State Project?
I did. Yeah. Don't tell me or don't ask me when. It was a couple of years back, but you know, I would love to get back there someday. But right now the fight I'm fighting is in Austin, Texas, yeehaw, California of Texas, and impacting all these states across the country.
Well, Sean, we're really, really glad that you'll be joining us for the New Hampshire Liberty Forum. Any final things you want to share with folks before we kind of wrap up here?
You know, it's not too late to buy Bitcoin. You know, it's tapping out. It's the highest price it's ever been right now. But just know that when it's to the moon and it's 10 million, you wish you got in at 71 grand. You can quote me on that. Revisit this clip in 5 years when it's, you know, the official currency of the U.S. So that's all I got to say. Other than that, I really appreciate you having me, Eric. It's awesome to see you at the helm at FSP and really looking forward to seeing you and all the other Liberty champions this weekend.
Well, looking forward to having you, Sean, looking forward to continued work between so many partner organizations, Free State Project, Young Americans for Liberty, and you guys are doing great work around the country and in individual states. Thank you to you, Sean, but a real thank you to all of the hardworking activists that you guys have. I know you're getting your hands dirty right now. You're knocking doors yourself. So you're not just a talker, you're a doer too. But thank you to everyone who's doing the hard work, getting the message of Liberty out, helping to elect Liberty legislators like we are so fortunate to have in spades here in New Hampshire. Well, we could always use some more. So there's always more fight ahead. All right. Well, Sean, thank you so much for joining us, and we'll see you at the New Hampshire Liberty Forum.
Sounds good. Thanks for having me. Keep fighting.
Awesome. All right, everyone. That was the interview with Sean Tima of Young Americans for Liberty. Before we close out for this evening, of course, there's the New Hampshire Liberty Forum this weekend. Get your tickets if you haven't already. But of course, also this summer, we have the Porcupine Freedom Festival. Porkfest.com, pork with a C, not with a K. I don't want to have to correct any more people on that. I got, you know, people saying, oh, I'm going to porkfest.com, and they're going and they're getting tickets for some barbecue festival. They're at the wrong site. No, the barbecue may be delicious, but you want the Porcupine Freedom Festival, porkfest.com. You are going to join us at Porkfest June 17th to the 23rd at Rogers Campground in Lancaster, New Hampshire. We're going to have Ron Paul joining us virtually, but also so many great folks in person. 2,000 of your favorite libertarians, you get to go camping with them, including Scott Horton, Gene Epstein, Jeffrey Tucker, James Bovar, David Friedman, and so many more. Plus you, because you're coming to join us, right? We want to see you there. This is not to be missed. Grab your tickets at porkfest.com before they sell out, and they do sell out. It sold out, I think, the last 2 years. So get your tickets while supplies last. And bring your friends, bring your family. This is a family-friendly Freedom Festival, and reserve your campsite. Campsites are getting down to the last few. So if you want a campsite, you want to act quickly. Space is limited. Porkfest.com. All right, everyone. That's it for the show. Thank you so much for tuning in tonight. Thank you to our guest, Sean Tima, and everyone at Young Americans for Liberty. And I want to thank our technical producer, Justin O'Donnell for running things behind the scenes. And furthermore, my opinion is the Federal Reserve should be destroyed. Good night.